This edition of Sunday Night's Main Event is dedicated to the memory of the Dynamite Kid, Tom Billington, and Larry the Axe Hennig.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
WWE ratings drop. Daniel Bryan is a crazed environmentalist. And we give some tender, loving care to previewing WWE TLC. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday Night's Main Event, Canada's premier wrestling radio show. I'm your host, Jason Agnew, and in the next 2 hours, we've got a bunch of pro wrestling and MMA chatter coming at you with a steady stream of various voices joining me. First up in the Triple Threat this week, I'll be joined by one of the hosts of Aftermath on Sportsnet 360, as well as a Wrestle Strikes regular, Nug Nargang, as well as a man who is tweeting up a storm this week to quite a bit of attention about heel turns. Todd Martin from Pro Wrestling Torch and MMA Fighting is going to be joining us as well. Following that, we'll take a look back at the career of the Dynamite Kid Tom Billington and Larry the Axe Hennig and get the inside scoop and injury report with Dave Meltzer in the Wrestling Observer Insider. And in our second hour, it's another edition of the Six-Pack Challenge, and Dan the Mouth of Vransky joins me via phone to risk a beer and duel with our predictions for next week's TLC pay-per-view, which he'll be in studio live for. Plus, turnbuckle trivia and your feedback, but first things first, taking a break, coming back, and we'll get you all up to date on the week that was in wrestling news. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
Friday nights is when all hell breaks loose as Major League Wrestling Fusion takes over BN Sports. Watch as some of the biggest stars in the sport, like MVP, Loki, Filthy Tom Lawler, Jimmy Havoc, Barrington Hughes, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, and many more battle it out for championship gold to truly prove who is the best of the best. Major League Wrestling Fusion, BN Sports.
Contact your local cable provider and get BN Sports today.
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday Night's Main Event.
We start the news this week with two sad stories. First of all, it came to light on Wednesday that the Dynamite Kid Tom Billington had passed away on his 60th birthday. Now, Billington had been confined to a wheelchair since 1997, mainly attributed to all of the injuries he suffered during his in-ring career. The Dynamite Kid is one of the most influential in-ring wrestlers of his era. He wrestled in the United Kingdom before finding his way to Stampede Wrestling in Calgary and becoming intertwined with the Hart family by marrying Bret Hart's sister-in-law. A small performer for his time, his high-flying and high-impact style would take him across the United States and Japan, where he would have a famous series of matches with Tiger Mask that revolutionized the junior heavyweight style. Most in North America know him as one half of the British Bulldogs with his real-life cousin, Davey Boy Smith. They won the WWF tag team titles on one occasion and then would have to drop them to the Hart Foundation due to Dynamite's back injuries. Bret Hart commented on Billington's death by saying, "There are people in life that have a ripple effect both professionally and personally. Tom Dynamite Kid Billington was one of those people. The second professional wrestling match of my career was against Dynamite. I benefited from his greatness, and through our matches in Stampede, WWE, and everywhere in between, I became a better wrestler because of him. Dynamite truly was one of the best wrestlers ever, pound for pound. Tom was family, my brother-in-law, and we were very close. In many ways, I felt like one of the few people who truly knew him, both the good and the bad. I saw Tom one final time this past June in England, and I can only hope he is finally at peace. My thoughts are with his children, Brown, Merrick, and Amaris, and the entire Billington family. On a personal note, when I started working with The Law Live Audio Wrestling, the same company that owned The Law actually also owned the Dynamite Kid website. And we used to do audio updates with then-Law host Jeff Merrick and Tom Billington. They were interesting to listen to, and they're no longer available. But along with that, at that time, there was assistance given to Tom Billington for his book, Pure Dynamite. Now, a lot of people think, you know, the origin of the trends of wrestling books comes with Mick Foley's Have a Nice Day. Well, that was kind of a joyous look at wrestling because Mick Foley is very funny. If you would like a bitter and jaded, truthful look at the world of wrestling, find a copy of Pure Dynamite and give it a read. It is eye-opening. I mean, a lot of things that happen, and I'll talk to Dave Meltzer about this later in the show. When people pass, you try to find the best in them, and that is what is spoken of. With Dynamite, no. You're definitely going to tell the stories about him being a real jerk. Just part of his persona and part of his legacy, actually. And self-admittedly, in this book, he pulls no punches, which he works stiff in the book like he did in the ring. Moving along to what is another sad story here. More bad news on Thursday. Larry the Axe Hennig passed away. Father to Kurt, Mr. Perfect Hennig, and grandfather to WWE's Curtis Axel. He was a big star in the AWA. Larry Hennig was a high school wrestler in Minneapolis, the same high school, actually, that Vern Gagne attended. He was recruited into pro wrestling by Vern and eventually found himself in the AWA going by the moniker of Pretty Boy, Larry Hennig, and forming a tag team with Handsome Harley Race. The two are known for their feud with Dick the Bruiser and the Crusher. He would later have a singles run in the WWWF, which is where he got the nickname The Axe for his use of the clothesline as his finisher. He would work programs with then WWWF champions Bruno Sammartino and Pedro Morales. He'd later return in a babyface capacity to the AWA before finishing up his career in 1986 due to knee and back problems. Larry Hennig was 82 years of age. Okay, into some current events here. Last week, we talked about how WWE moved the WrestleMania NXT show from Saturday to Friday, and this week, tickets were put on sale and sold out nearly immediately. For those of you that listened to the Mid-Card Comedy Podcast this week, Mark Andrada did get tickets. Two pairs, actually. So you can find him and one of those pairs of tickets at Mark Andrada on Twitter. I feel like StubHub. Get ready for garbage tomorrow night. On the final build to the Nia Jax-Ronda Rousey TLC match, it's going to be a press conference. Yeah, Alexa Bliss mentioned it on Twitter and asked for fans' questions for the event. Personally, I expect the WWE to do their best reenactment of the Jon Jones-Daniel Cormier chaos that Impact Wrestling also attempted to copy before Bound for Glory. Meanwhile, on SmackDown, we get a WrestleMania rematch with Charlotte and Asuka, as well as a rap battle featuring the Usos and The Bar? I'm still going to take that over the fake press conference. Bray Wyatt, if you're wondering where he was, well, apparently he's been playing with his Twitter, deleting things. He's deleted all of his old tweets and tweeted, "Today I am someone different. Today I have finally become who I really am." I'm not sure what this means, but we can only hope that it's Husky Harris 2.0 and it's on its way. Dakota Kai appeared to suffer a knee-slash-leg injury at Friday night's NXT house show in Green Bay, Wisconsin. She was teaming with Kari Zane and Candice LeRae against Shayna Baszler and Marina Shafir and Jessamyn Duke as well. It became a two-on-two tag match after Kai's injury and Zane and LeRae won by DQ. We don't have any more updates at this time. Speaking of knee injuries, Friday, Tegan Nox gave us an update about her knee injury via Twitter. Nox hurt her knee, if you remember, back at this past year's Mae Young Classic tournament. Nox reported that she had to undergo a scope this week to clean up the knee after some, quote, gunk built up after the surgery. She's now on the road to recovery, had positive words to say about the WWE Performance Center, and hopes to be back in action by this summer. In a scary incident, the former Big Cass was appearing at a House of Hardcore event on Saturday night in the old ECW arena. He came out to the lobby at intermission and fell down and had a seizure. Now, reports are that he was talking and okay, but he was still taken away to the hospital for observation. And at this point, we don't have any update on his condition following the seizure. Hopefully, he is all right. In a follow-up to last week's MLW story, the promotion's middleweight title has been vacated as MJF, that's Maxwell Jacob Friedman, remember that name, he's going to be big, he's unable to compete on the December 14th card due to a fractured elbow. Therefore, the scheduled ladder match will now be for the title. And finally, Peter Polacco, better known to wrestling fans as Justin Credible, is in some legal trouble. He was arrested on Tuesday on charges of 3 counts of violating a protective order, third-degree criminal mischief, first-degree assault, and third-degree breach of peace. He has now had a number of violations of a protective order filed by his wife, Jill, and that happened back in March. Yikes. Alrighty, we are going to take a break after that. We're going to come back. I want to talk about this Daniel Bryan character. It's getting rave reviews. Yeah, the character is great, but why? Why is it happening? We'll talk about it when we come back, and then the triple threat, Meltzer mouth, all that good stuff as we head on into it. It's Sunday night's main event. You're listening to it on TSN Radio. All the other kids with the
If you're a fan of Sunday night's main event, check out WrestlingObserver.com, a daily podcast, multiple podcasts per day, with hosts Dave Meltzer, Brian Alvarez, and a number of others. You get a full library of podcasts dating back to 2005, over 9,000 shows, hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter dating back to 1991, and so much more. Don't miss out. Check it out today, WrestlingObserver.com.
Fickle. Fickle. Do you hear the sheep? Listen to them. I say something and they say? They're reciting something stupid from 20 years ago, but they can't help themselves. These people harm the earth every single day with their needless consumption. Every single day they drink their plastic water bottles. Every single day they eat their factory farmed meat, which emits methane into the atmosphere, which causes permanent change to the climate.
Sheep go to heaven, goats go to hell. Go to hell.
Welcome back to Sunday night's main event. There, of course, a clip from SmackDown this week in which we really got a little bit more in depth about the Daniel Bryan character, the crazy environmentalist and vegan that he is now portraying. All right. A lot of people love this thing. A lot of people love what's happening here. They're very entertained by the turn. So let me pretense this by saying, yeah, I mean, it's entertaining. I agree. Let's face it, Daniel Bryan is a smart, gifted performer. He's both great in the ring and as a promo, which we saw tremendous evidence of this week. I mean, after all, the best characters are extensions of oneself, right? Daniel Bryan is an intelligent person. He also happens to be a near vegan and an environmentalist. So he's taking all of the stereotypes of the way in which vegans are perceived and extreme environmentalists may act and are perceived that are in the media, and using them as a way that is benefiting his heel persona. And, I mean, after week one or two, he is excellent at it. Just look at the way he put on that promo clinic on SmackDown to shut down the yes chants completely and turn the audience by the end to boo him. Yeah. They booed him, and that's hard to do since he's a very loved performer. So is this a good character? Oh, yeah. Is it well performed? You bet. Do I like it? No. I don't. And here's why. And I know a lot of you are probably up in arms with me saying I don't like this. Here's my rationale in regards to what's happening to Daniel Bryan and the switch that they've made. You see, it's easier to be a heel than a baby face, especially since WWE has had an inability to book baby faces. And even though this has been the way the company has worked for a long time, the fans did get behind Daniel Bryan in 2014, thanks to the Yes chant and ultimately just the pure dislike of Roman Reigns. And Daniel Bryan became the biggest babyface in the company in spite of the way he was booked by the WWE. Now, after fighting back from the concussion, people still like Daniel Bryan. I know that WWE has royally botched his comeback, but in my opinion, people still love the Yes chant, and they still want Daniel Bryan to succeed and overcome the concussion problems and become champion once again. And to me, as a fan watching this, after seeing his retirement speech, after seeing him come back, this story has not been told. The post-concussion run, this story has not been out there. It's barely begun because it's been so botched. So in my opinion, there's a time for this holier-than-thou vegan environmentalist character. But why is it happening now? This was done on a drop of a dime with little to no motivation. I mean, how did the fans first turn on Daniel Bryan? Why does he now think they're fickle? They're the same people that supported him before and have continued to support him. In this situation, do you not think it would make more sense to have AJ Styles be upset that he's the one that's been holding the title and keeping SmackDown Live afloat? He keeps telling us that he built it. And his opponent has been floating around in a hyperbaric chamber and has left the fans? Yeah, I know it's not due to his own fault, but if AJ's a heel, then it makes sense for him to say that. Yeah, I'm saying it would have been a better decision to flip AJ heel for this feud. To me, it seemed like the easier way to go. But alas, WWE has opted not to go with that. And instead, we get the holier-than-thou Daniel Bryan character. And I'll enjoy it. I just don't quite know why it's happening. So that's my issue with it. Granted, at least I do see the value, and he's made the change and is not getting inoculated and then showing up wearing a gas mask and trying to cut a promo while wearing it before taking it off, in which he would then talk about nothing. Of course, I'm talking about Dean Ambrose. Dean Ambrose is just a mess of a character. He might be a mess of a human being. I don't know. Apparently, he's Dean Ambrosing himself right now. If you listen to the podcast, you know what that means. Let's remember, I was the guy that was 100% behind Ambrose going heel upon the breakup of The Shield. He was the guy that needed it most. The lunatic fringe character was and is stale. He needed a fresh cone of paint, and I mean more than just a haircut. Granted, the whole Shield breakup was definitely rushed due to Roman Reigns' leukemia, and that is very unfortunate, but it doesn't make an excuse for the horrendous character that he's currently doing. Of all the sophistication and the thought that has gone into Daniel Bryan's succinct morphing and change to be a heel, Dean Ambrose is simply the same idiot, but now we're all supposed to boo him and then ask questions to Renee Young afterwards about why she doesn't know why this is happening, right? Because that's not getting old now, is it? So what's the end game with that? Is Renee going to become a heel announcer? Or do we just have to listen to Corey chastise her every week in that awkward on-camera moment when Cole stands in between them silently? Listen, I hope WWE has a plan for whatever is happening with Dean and Renee, but I'm not going to keep my hopes up because, as I like to say, in life, never mind just wrestling, the pessimist is never disappointed. Although, I guess I've been taking that back. I mean, I was about to say the WWE finds a new way to disappoint me every week, but in actuality, they find the same way to disappoint me every week. And that's the problem right there. The same disappointments each and every week on Raw and SmackDown. Is it just me? No, it's repetitive. When we come back, Todd Martin and Nug Nargang are going to join me in the Triple Threat, and we're going to look at these characters that are on WWE TV, or maybe lack of characters in some cases. It's the Triple Threat, and it's next on Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
I ask you every week, Renee, what's going on?
That's a problem. You do ask me every single week. I don't know what you want me to say. How can I say more than what we just
saw?
Are
we going to talk, like, treat the entire WWE universe like they don't know what's going on?
No, but obviously I'm in a bit of a precarious situation with this.
Do you know or do you not? It's that simple.
Listen,
people need to know.
No one is entitled to know what goes on behind closed doors between a husband and wife. How dare you?
Love and marriage go together like a horse and carriage.
Each week on Sunday Night's Main Event, our Turnbuckle Trivia winner receives a t-shirt from ProWrestlingTees.com. Well, now that t-shirt could be one of ours. Visit ProWrestlingTees.com/SNMEradio and get your official Sunday Night's Main Event t-shirt. It's got that nifty 80s parody logo and comes in your choice of white or black. Because unlike modern-day wrestling, I prefer not to endorse shades of gray. Get your t-shirt today at ProWrestlingTees.com/SNMEradio.
Is the triple threat.
There's gotta be a triple threat.
Triple threat match.
On Sunday night's main event.
It's time for the triple threat here on Sunday night's main event. Joining me on the line right now, one of my partners up on stage and also one of the hosts of Aftermath, Nug Nargang. You were in the big chair this week for Aftermath.
I was, yes. Caroline decided to take a much-needed vacation to Hawaii, and I got to run the show for a week. It was great.
Well, hosting kind of comes naturally to you, I feel. On your partner in this triple threat, or opponent, shall we say, Todd Martin, tweeting celebrity, also, of course, contributor at Pro Wrestling Torch. Todd, how are you?
I'm good. Hawaii and Toronto's ties continue to grow.
Yes. Indeed. All right. So, Todd, I want to start with you this week because you tweeted out something that did get a lot of attention. 58 comments, 79 retweets, 256 likes at last I checked, and it continues to grow. And you tweeted this. In the past few months, Lashley has turned, Elias has turned, Braun has turned twice, Nia has turned, Becky has turned twice, Carmella has turned, Charlotte has turned, Bryan has turned, Big Show has turned twice, Ambrose has turned, and now Ziggler has turned. You did this after Raw. It got a lot of attention. A turn for the sake of a turn is something that Vince Russo used to do all the time. I don't want to call this Russo-esque. I just feel as though, as you pointed out here, doing so many of these makes it mean absolutely nothing when turns happen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. And the funny thing is, too, I was trying to figure out where to put a cutoff point because there's a whole another group of turns right before the time period I started, like the Orton turn,
yep.
Which wasn't that long ago as well. But I sort of had to set a cutoff at some point. Yeah, I was just thinking about it as we saw the Ziggler thing because I'm thinking, boy, it feels like everybody on the show has been switched one direction or another. I think with Russo, it was like the idea was you need to get attention by doing stuff, constantly doing stuff. I'm not sure that that's Vince's mentality. Like, we got to shake things up. I think it's more like he's having a lot of trouble with getting crowds to react the way he wants to certain people, and he's constantly trying to repackage people to try to get them other people in the places that he wants them. And it leads to a lot of shuffling to try to get things lined up because he's having a lot of difficulty figuring out what his fans want of different characters.
Well, a lot of that is, of course, because it's all about getting heat on the shows. And WWE is, I guess, okay at booking heels, but a pure inability to book a babyface is what I'm seeing here. Nug, looking at these characters, I mean, it's like you don't know where they're coming from now with all of these turns. Why do you think it's so difficult for the WWE to book a babyface to get over?
I think partially because they spent so much time trying to book Roman as a babyface, and then when Roman left, they realized they had done no work with anybody else. So they worked the whole show around babyface Roman Reigns, and then when Roman's gone due to his illness, they realized they had nothing. So they had to realign the entire roster on Monday Night Raw pretty much. And now they're like, we've done no work to build up any emotional attachment to any of these characters. So they're trying their best to do it in a short amount of time. It doesn't seem to be working. They didn't really have a problem doing this back in the 80s when you knew who to cheer and boo for. But they're so set on everything being a gray area.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the 80s, everybody was Captain America or Dr. Doom. And then the 90s, everybody wanted to be the Punisher. And now we're in the 2010s and everybody's the Punisher or everybody's trying to be the Punisher. And you cannot pick a guy to care about one way or the other.
Do you think some of it, because we've seen a lot of comic book references that have popped up on WWE TV, and I mean, obviously those audiences, you know, share... are primarily the same. I mean, the Avengers are so hot right now, and if you look at something like Infinity War, where Thanos is out there snapping his fingers, and he's trying to cure a problem of overpopulation, and you're kind of like, well, you know, he has a slight point, but doing it in the wrong way. Do you think some of what's happening here is a reflection of pop culture, or is it just Vince McMahon being an insane old man that is disconnected with his audience?
I think it might be both. I think Vince... might be a little disconnected with this audience, but they're overpopulated for sure. There are so many guys on both shows that they're not doing anything with, and they're focusing on the same six people on both shows. But back in the 90s, when everybody loved the Attitude Era, that was when the undercard mattered, and right now the undercard doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, there's definitely, it seems to be zero importance in the undercard. I agree. Now, you mentioned the Roman Reigns thing, but on SmackDown, and Todd, I'll go to you first here. With SmackDown, all of the talk this week has been about Daniel Bryan. It's another turn. And, I mean, you kind of tweeted, you did mention Daniel Bryan in your tweet here. He's a heel. He's a holier-than-thou vegan and environmentalist. What do you think of the character and its positioning?
I think it's great. I've really been enjoying it. I mean, I was a skeptic on the Daniel Bryan thing just because I think people like him so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how much mileage they can get out of this just because I think people will naturally gravitate back towards him at some point relatively soon. But I don't care so much just in the sense he's so entertaining as a heel. And I miss him as a heel. I mean, during the independent run, he was so great in redefining himself and acting as heel in different ways and playing an antagonist to a whole, you know, collection of characters. And you saw in the way that he handled this character on Tuesday that there was much more of a connection to the reasons for why he's a heel than with a lot of characters. And I think it's always been the case in wrestling that the best heels are people where you can understand where they're coming from, even if you don't agree with what they're doing. That's the thing you brought up with Thanos and, mm-hmm. and the Avengers. And with Daniel Bryan, he's bringing up a bunch of like realistic gripes that he would have with the world in general and the reasons that he'd be upset, along with just people in general. And then, you know, putting, you know, communicating that through his character in a way that makes it feel more believable, in contrast to somebody like Dean Ambrose, who's on Raw going, "You people smell." Like, the idea of nobody knows anybody that's angry that other people smell all the time in certain cities. But there are definitely people out there that are frustrated with, you know, with global warming, with frustrated with various political factors, with different things that Daniel Bryan brought up. And thus there was more of a realism to the character, more to sink your teeth into. And when the person feels more like an extension of their personality, it's easier to either like them or dislike them.
Now, Nug, I know you're going to love this character for the performance of it, because Daniel Bryan is excellent. However, done on a drop of a dime, done without necessarily motivation to the character that the WWE knows Daniel Bryan as. How do you feel about the switch?
That's the shock. That's the thing they're going for. And when they're in panic mode, they go for a shock and they go for something that will grab attention. And so they turn Daniel Bryan to get the attention. But it's so funny. Like, when you think about the motivations of the guys that are on the bad guys on Raw and SmackDown, look at SmackDown. Your big heel Daniel Bryan is an environmentalist. And then Samoa Joe advocates not drinking. And then over on Raw, Drew McIntyre is a hard worker, and Dean Ambrose got vaccinated. So I think it really shows who Vince McMahon considers to be the villains of the world.
That's actually very funny. I've never thought of it in that respect, if this is all coming from Vince's brain. Do you think, though, Todd, do you think that this is... too quick? Because I, you know, earlier in the show, I went off on the fact that because the WWE audience knows Daniel Bryan, loves Daniel Bryan, you know, they made him champion. They went against what WWE wanted in 2014. To me, the comeback from the concussion, it wasn't finished yet. That story wasn't told. And flipping him to this character, to me, it was too early.
Well, they definitely blew it with the concussion thing. I mean, it was amazing how little mileage they got out of Daniel Bryan's big return, and a real big indictment of their creative process, because that should have been absolutely massive. And you could imagine, I mean, if Daniel Bryan had gone on the outside, like I think he might have wanted to, but the contract didn't allow him to, I think at this point he'd be a significantly bigger star than he is in WWE, which is, you know, not what you want given the WWE's television situation and you know, the ability to interact with so many more people. That's not what you want out of a major television show. With that said, his momentum had stalled so much over the course of the year, and he was very cold as a babyface even late in the year, that I don't know, even if theoretically you'd like to get a lot more out of him, I don't know exactly how you would have at that point in time without shifting his character. Now, you could say, and I think there's a solid argument for this, like, shift his character and just make him a babyface, make him an edgier babyface, you know, have him change up what he is, get frustrated, get angry, you know, have him use underhanded tactics, but do that in a way where he's still going against bad guys and people like him. He's just an edgier, you know, version of himself, like Becky Lynch.
Right.
But what they did, I think, is also a way to add, you know, add energy in a character that was, you know, was not doing very well out there.
You know, it's funny you bring up Becky Lynch, but the way WWE went with Becky Lynch was they attempted to turn Becky Lynch heel and the fans would have none of it. And I'm actually wondering now, Nug, and I'll throw this at you, is it a matter of 2 weeks' time before the fans are chanting Fickle back at Daniel Bryan?
Well, fans love chanting anything. As long as it's under three syllables, they'll chant pretty much anything. Daniel Bryan got over with the fans when he was a bad guy screaming no, 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 and then when it turned to yes, 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 they just turned with him. Remember how everybody was on board with it, and then he lost to Sheamus so fast at WrestleMania, and then the crowd was rabid.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't want that to happen. But honestly, who can say that this isn't all due to the concussion? It's such a serious shift in character immediately. Why not say, well, maybe we just have to bonk him on the head again, Flintstone style, and then
oh,
he
man.
Turns back to good old Daniel Bryan.
Don't give them ideas like that. what was the character back in WCW that had amnesia? Was it? It was Cactus Jack, and he became Sailor
yeah,
Jack or something like that?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. That's great. We're headed there now, are we?
Maybe.
Let's talk about more character stuff here. Samoa Joe. So we saw Joe being a responsible bartender this week. Now, going back in time, you know, CM Punk played out this role with Jeff Hardy and did this type of feud of, you know, fans, you're endorsing a guy who's known a lot for all of the bad things that happened to him outside the ring and his abuse of drugs and alcohol. Joe, though, is not doing that character, and he's also not known as a straight edge guy. To me, this was a very strange turn, and I mean, I love Samoa Joe, and I saw him read a fairy tale and went nuts for it earlier this year. This one, though, doesn't make sense to me, and to me, I find it not necessary in this feud. Nug, what do you think?
I think it's just more of, if you just take away the specifics of it, it's more of just Joe needling good guys where he knows it will get a reaction. Like he did the family thing with AJ Styles, and now he's doing the drugs and alcohol thing with Jeff Hardy. It's not too big of a stretch for me. It just seemed to happen out of nowhere. Like he just shifted focus to Jeff Hardy for no reason at all. I mean, back in the day, Kane and Jericho had a feud over Jericho spilling coffee on Kane, and there wasn't even that. In this situation, it's just all of a sudden Joe's on Hardy, and the show your work. That's all I want to do. I just want to tell the WWE, show your work. Show me the long division and show me the work, how it got here.
It's not necessarily a turn, Todd, but I think it kind of falls into that same category of it's just happening because. And as Nug said, there's no work to be shown here with this character shift and this new feud. What did you think of Joe pouring beers?
I don't know if I felt like there was a character shift. It felt like, you know, Joe is just sort of a mean guy who goes after people and what he views as their vulnerabilities. So he went after AJ's family. He goes after Jeff's history. He's looking for, you know, ways that he can exploit people's weaknesses and play mind games with them. With that said, I'm not a big fan of that angle, even though I think Joe's performances, as usual, are great. Just because with Daniel Bryan, we brought up him earlier, and the fact that he's out there, you know, talking about things like, you know, you should, you know, recycle and protect the environment. I don't think people, when they react to him as a heel, are thinking, boy, he's wrong about those things. They think, boy, he's, you know, sort of out there and he's being a jerk in the way that he's reacting, and he's so angry and frustrated. Whereas with Joe, if you're reacting to the story that they're telling with Joe as a heel, I think you've ultimately got to say, either one, that's a low blow to bring up Jeff's drinking and driving from the past,
mm-hmm.
or two, it isn't really, you know, you're making it out to be worse than it is. And I don't really like either of those options, in the sense that drinking and driving is a very serious thing. Jeff has done this, you know, these sorts of issues repeatedly in the past. he does deserve, I think, more criticism for it than he's gotten. And so the idea that fans would watch this and go, I'm more sympathetic towards Jeff when Joe makes these points, is not the way I'd want people to think about the Jeff Hardy situation.
I agree with you there. They kind of, you know, even when they did the Hardys documentary, they had a little bit at the end about Jeff Hardy and these problems that he's having, but kind of done in passing and didn't affect the push that he's been given on the main roster. You know, we've talked a lot about characters today and character switching, and there is a performer who seems to be by default being pushed to the top of Raw, and that's Drew McIntyre, for lack of Reigns and lack of Strowman being there. Drew McIntyre, to me, lacks character. And listen, I know he's got the physical stature that WWE likes, and along with that, yes, he can talk, but I don't know if this guy can really take the ball and run with it. Nug, what do you think of Drew McIntyre?
They haven't shown the work. He came up, Ziggler, quote-unquote, brought him in to be his partner, and I don't want to say quietly, but he's taken out a couple of pretty big guys, or had a hand in taking out a couple of pretty big guys. Without Ziggler, without the guy he was tag champs with, without the guy, they have a shirt together, and they're supposed to be a team, and all of a sudden, they just quash the team and turn Ziggler for one match on Raw. That was a pay-per-view. That should have been a pay-per-view. In the past, if a tag team split, it was, and one guy turned on the other, it was going to pay off at a big match. That match happened on Raw for nothing. Just to further the story between Drew and Balor, who really don't have anything going on other than a couple of fights, like a couple of mishmashes with involving Strowman and Lashley and Baron Corbin. But the audience knows him as a guy who kicks butt, but every time he grabs the microphone, nobody cares. They haven't done the work with his character. Yes, he works hard, and yes, he thinks he's better than everybody else, but so does everybody else. What makes him stand apart from everyone? I don't know yet.
I think part of the issue with the tag teams is WWE seems to have an inability of breaking up a tag team and doing a decent feud thereafter, which is, you know, something that can't be said in the past because they used to be pretty decent at that, even if it was always one guy taken off and the Rockers rule of one guy not doing so well. In this case, though, my issue was they just weren't together long enough. Like, I expected, Todd, when you had Ziggler and McIntyre together in the building of McIntyre, there would be an extended tag team title run with these two guys, but we didn't see any of that.
Yeah, I think that was probably the idea. I think they needed to make changes when Roman Reigns was out of there, which sort of shuffled everything up. That led to the Dean Ambrose breakup with Seth Rollins, and I think that also led to this. So I'm sympathetic to an extent with that. With that said, I think that they should have waited longer for the Ziggler McIntyre split for reasons you bring up in terms of characterization, which is I didn't really get a good sense of why McIntyre would want to get rid of this guy at this point in time. Like, it wasn't like he'd sort of accomplished some big goal, like he won the title or he'd gotten rid of some sort of adversary. It was just like one random week. And he had acknowledged that to this point that Ziggler had been useful to him. So I didn't understand why he would get rid of this guy who he doesn't care about, but is useful to him. Like, to me, like, that character would wait for another time to then, you know, discard this guy because he's got better things or he's got a better option for him. So I thought that part of the story didn't make a ton of sense. With that said, I'm more bullish on McIntyre in general, I think, than you guys are. I think he's a really good talker, a very good wrestler. I think that he's working well as a just sort of nasty heel. And I see big things for him in the next couple of years. I think he's going to do really well.
I think that Vince McMahon sees that as well. After all, remember, at one point he was the chosen one. We'll see if that actually works this time around. Let's go, before we say goodbye today, to talk about what's got to be the hottest angle in WWE TV, and that is Becky and Charlotte, with now Asuka thrown into the mix. I don't know about you guys, but I've noticed a distinct lack of physicality from Becky Lynch, and her being cleared, I think, is still a question for next week, unless you've heard different. What happens at TLC next week with Asuka, Charlotte, and Becky? Todd, we'll go to you first on this one.
I think you have Charlotte win the match with Becky sort of out of commission on the outside, and Asuka being the one to chase her, and then you have Becky chase Charlotte for the title later on. That's what I'm expecting.
And Nug?
I see it flipped, actually. I see Asuka stealing the title out of that three-way and then Charlotte and Asuka having a great match, and then Becky getting it at WrestleMania.
Ooh, but that would eliminate Ronda Rousey from this scenario, though. I mean, that's...
Oh, no.
Oh, so Nug, not a fan of Ronda Rousey?
No.
Why not? I mean, this is one that WWE is hanging their hat on the publicity that Ronda Rousey can bring them with main eventing WrestleMania, and I got to see her going to be in the ring with Becky or Charlotte, one of the two, if not both.
Well, I'm sure it somehow she'll be in that match, but we've spent how many years now with ex-UFC guy Brock Lesnar with the title, and no one can beat them, and it looks like we're just seeing it again with Ronda. It's a boring thing. I know it's women and it's the first time ever, but it's a boring thing we've seen before, at least for me.
Ooh, Todd?
I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I think with Rousey, she hasn't had the title that long, and I tend to like longer champions anyway. I think that can be beneficial in pro wrestling, and I think the right finish to it is Becky beating Ronda, so that goes against that as well. Now, that doesn't mean they do that. I think it's more likely they'd have Ronda Rousey win, which would be sort of a bummer at the end of the story, but I think the optimal situation is Becky versus Ronda, one-on-one, Becky beats Ronda.
Wow, and you know what? For wrestling fans, I think that is the right scenario. I think we all kind of agree that Becky is the talent that wrestling fans have built themselves. She's the Daniel Bryan from 2014 that's happening this year. But Ronda is the one that they feel has the name. So it's a very interesting scenario, and at least we can say that as we follow along to WrestleMania this year. Todd, where can people read and hear you?
Sure, you can find me. I do a VIP podcast at pwtorch.com every week. It's called The Fix with Wade Keller. We go 2 to 3 hours. We talk about everything. It's great. I hope people subscribe there at The Torch. I also do a weekly column at sherdog.com on MMA. And you can also check out my blogs of the major UFC cards, as well as rankings and whatnot at latimes.com. And the Twitter handle is Todd Martin MMA.
That's what I was just going to say. That's where these tweets can be found, which we base a lot of our conversation on. Nug, are you hosting again this week in the big chair, or is Caroline back?
Caroline's back, so I'm back on the end with Anthony. And you can find me at Nug Nargang on the Twitter and the Instagram. And you can see me on Aftermath at 7:30 on Sportsnet 360 every Tuesday right before SmackDown Live.
Thanks, gentlemen. Great chat.
Pleasure.
Stay with us. Whole nother hour to come here on Sunday night's main event. We've got Meltzer, we've got Mouth, we've got Turnbuckle Trivia, and your feedback. It's Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio. Thanks for listening to the free feed of Sunday night's main event. If you'd like to hear the second hour, just visit patreon.com/snmeradio and become a patron. This gives you access to the weekly shows and all the podcasts that we do as well. It's patreon.com/snmeradio.